episode 324 of Late Night Linux, recorded on the 10th of March 2025. I'm Jaru, and with me are Phelan.
Have you even thanked me for being here yet?
Too soon. Graham?
Hello.
And Will.
Elon's going to go and thank you.
Oh, good.
Can we just not? It's too depressing. Let's do some news. And let's start with the big Firefox and Mozilla news. And that is Firefox 136 with vertical tabs. Yay. How exciting.
Yay.
Oh, no, hang on. No, it's the terms of use and updated privacy notice.
Boo.
That's the big news, really. Yeah. So this has caused a massive stink. They have introduced the terms of use, which people are like, what? Why you didn't have that before? And they updated the privacy notice and they deleted a bit of that that said, does Firefox sell your personal data? Nope, never have, never will. And we protect you from the many advertisers who do. Firefox products are designed to protect your privacy. That's a promise. And yeah, now they just deleted that. So that's cool. Now, they did clarify the situation or attempt to clarify the situation.
Yeah, it legally is. The term sell means many different things in many different places. But, you know, they could have explained that properly and explained what they're doing with it.
There's a lot of sort of conspiratorial thinking, like, oh, they're turning evil and they're selling our data. And they're saying that anything that you put into Firefox, they can sell or use for AI bullshit.
Hmm.
But I think this is a gaffe rather than them turning evil.
I think, once again, this is really just poor communication rather than anything else. When I saw that, nope, never have, never will, and we will protect you from many of the advertisers that do, I thought, well, that actually does make them quite liable for a lot of responsibility if you take that at face value. And maybe they're just removing it to reduce their attack surface if anybody would like to get litigious with Firefox.
Yeah, I agree. As much as we rag on Firefox and Mozilla every week, I do still trust them to do the right thing. And I think that this is just a classic gaffe. And what this tells us is that they have stopped trying to explain the real reason behind these things, partly because nobody cares, partly because people aren't able to comprehend the sort of legal terms behind this, I'm sure. But I don't think that that is really helping the greater cause of humanity, where we won't engage in these complex discussions because people won't understand the meanings of them. And so we find ourselves in this position where gaffes are made, where just explaining exactly what was going on would have been more acceptable. But yeah, I don't think that's Mozilla's fault.
I think that's a really good point, actually. They could solve this by just promising to explain why they're making certain decisions rather than just trying to write blog posts that don't make any sense or obfuscate the real meaning. I admit, and this, maybe they should say, we can't really say, because it makes us more vulnerable to some kind of legal challenges, rather than even going into the detail. But even that helps. Just silently deleting something when you know the open source community are constantly running diffs. It's just naive.
Yeah.
Or this is the Michael O'Leary form of marketing, and now they've got their moment in the light again.
Well, in their update post, they say the following. I'm just going to read it, and let's see if we can make sense of this, right? The reason we've stepped away from making blanket claims that we never sell your data, in quotes, is because in some places, the legal definition of sale of data is broad and evolving. As an example, the California Consumer Privacy Act defines sale as the selling, renting, releasing, disclosing, disseminating, making available, transferring, or otherwise communicating orally, in writing, or by electronic or other means, a consumer's personal information by a business to another business or third party in exchange for monetary or other valuable consideration. I mean, is that not them just saying that they are going to sell your data, though? Like, if you're not going to give the data away to anyone else, then why do you need to say that?
I think I saw something about the fact that if you fill out a form or something like that, even if that is enough for it to be the case. So I don't know. I guess legalese and being scared of it, maybe.
So you're saying that this is an exercise in arse covering that's been communicated terribly and has resulted in a massive backlash?
I mean, I think it's as on brand as you want it to be.
I'm not convinced this is a massive backlash either. I think this is just classic storm in a teacup Linux news. Something has happened. Let's all go crazy about it for about 10 minutes and then we'll forget about it by next week.
And carry on using Chrome.
Yeah.
Well, that was the best. All the people go, well, that's it. I'm not using Firefox anymore. I'm going over here to Chrome. Cruel. It's like, good luck.
Well, no, people are saying, oh, I've had enough of Firefox. I'm going to use one of these downstream forks that completely relies on Firefox.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, yeah, maybe they can remove some of the features, the anti-features or whatever, for a while. But if Firefox goes away, then so does all of the downstream.
Yeah.
Using a fork is not the answer long term.
Some would question whether using Mozilla long term is a good answer. But yeah, let's just ignore that one.
Yes, indeed. But it's funny that just this week, I've started to see people posting screenshots of Chrome saying, we've disabled uBlock Origin. Sorry, eh? And it just is quite unfortunate timing for Mozilla to do this. Because they could have really been cashing in on, hey, come back to Firefox. We've got uBlock Origin.
They still could do that, I think. The internet has a very short memory. And I think give it another couple of weeks when the block of uBlock Origin is more complete on Chrome, and then that's the time to go to town. I think they can still pull this one back.
I genuinely don't know why they're not blasting this everywhere. Like, this is their segment, and they just seem like they don't care.
But I can see the other side of that story, which is that ultimately the people that are paying for Mozilla are Google. And the people who are paying for Google are the advertisers. And so you don't really want to stick two fingers up to all the people that are really keeping your business alive. So I can understand why they're not making a big song and dance about it.
But it's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy, though, because at some point the legal case or the DOJ will break Google up, and then they won't have to fund an adversary just for the sake of being able to go, look, over there, those guys do search too. It's like, you know, They have given away the fact that they could have been something sort of fighting for this stuff.
I agree that it makes sense for Mozilla to not shit where they eat, as it were. But I think that we should be shouting this stuff as an open source community. We should be telling as many people as we can. You know, when someone comes to you and says, oh, my ad block isn't working, suddenly there's fucking adverts everywhere.
How often does that fucking happen?
Well, the people who you support.
Just standing idly at a bus stop on an L granny because my ad block's not working. It's like, have you tried Firefox? What? Setting fire to a fox?
Hey, it's worked for Arch for years.
Oh, come on. I'm talking about like my dad or whatever. You know, I set him up with Chrome because I knew that websites would actually fucking work in it.
Well, you're part of the problem then, aren't you?
Yeah.
Maybe you should lecture yourself.
Well, I am. This is me. This is my therapy session. This is me, my intervention. But yeah, don't set people up with Chrome anymore. Set them up with Firefox is a good start.
Maybe Firefox should rename itself to uBlock Origin. I've got uBlock Origin. Here's the executable. Just download and run it. You'll be fine.
Or maybe instead of pissing off the uBlock Origin people, you could just rename it as No Ads Browser. I mean, I've seen stupider shit.
Talking about it, I think they need to embrace this. I can see that they're hedging, they're being diplomatic, but there's two things, and we've talked about this so much, but they're really poor communicators. They don't seem to understand the message, the reason why we all care so much about them. They just don't. I'm sure they do internally, but this isn't communicated. And secondly, they just need to accept that their future lies purely with the privacy, with controlling ads. That's it. That's got to be it. They need to accept that now. Take the Google money while it still comes in and accept that that's going to be their spine.
Yeah, take the Google money, invest it in Tesla, or maybe invest it in shorting Tesla, and then get rid of all of the senior management because we don't need them. Spend it all on engineers and accessibility people and, you know, the people doing the actual work. And then start asking for donations in the browser. Job done. It's really not that hard, is it, when you think about it? When you just simplify things and spout bullshit on a podcast, it's pretty easy, actually.
I think we'd do a great job. I think put us in charge of it.
You let Dougal do a funeral?
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Porkbun.com. Porkbun was named the number one domain registrar from 2023 to 2025 by USA Today and is refreshingly different from the big name players. They're proud to offer low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions, plus powerful hosting options and incredible support. They've got everything from .com domains to specialist ones like .pro, .dev, and .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies like SSL certificates, Whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All of these features and tools are backed by incredible support 365 days a year. And if you do a quick search, you'll find that Porkbun has thousands of five-star reviews from actual real human customers. So support the show and go to porkbun.com/latenightlinux25 to get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they are the best domain name registrar around. That's porkbun.com/latenightlinux25. Excellent news. We talked about Flow, the animated film that was nominated for an Oscar. Well, it only bloody won.
It's mad.
And the director, whose name I'm not going to attempt to pronounce, sorry, thanked Blender in the acceptance speech in front of dozens of people. Because who really cares about the Oscars? But nevertheless, getting up there and thanking Blender as like the second or third organization was amazing.
Well, the people who care about things like that, who are involved with film and cartoon industry, they might care about it. And that's awesome that they got to hear that.
Yeah. And whenever a film wins an Oscar, it gets loads of attention. And you're right. People who are into animation will probably be more interested and may not have heard of Blender and now will have.
I think it's amazing news. I think it's been an incredible journey for Blender. You know, all that. Do you remember? I mean, wasn't it? It was a proprietary, wasn't it? And it was bought by a crowdfunding campaign or something like a crowdfunding campaign for the time. And it's just slowly grown and built up support and a community. And it's an incredible project. And I think when you're looking at where to invest your time in learning a tool like Blender, because it requires a considerable investment, and you probably only become good at one thing, like somebody learning Pro Tools, for example. It's great to know that it's capable of winning an Oscar. That's all you need to know. It's like with Godot and whether it's capable of building games that you can sell and people are buying on Steam. And when you know that, you're happy to invest your time into it. And so I think it's really brilliant news.
Well, speaking of Godot, 4.4 has come out and is apparently amazing if you know about that sort of thing.
It does look great, doesn't it? I wonder why they don't call it Godot. I wish I had the time. I'd really like to make it part of my 2025 kind of dreams to at least try and do something with Godot, because I've always had a dream of, you know, doing a video game, maybe like a lot of us. And I look at their kind of 2D support, their 2.5D support, their 3D support, look at how the quality of the output that's being produced and the new interactive elements where you don't have to do so much hands-on coding like you can in Unity, for example, and the fact that it's building a similar community that Blender has. I mean, it's very exciting.
Yeah, and no risk of rug pulls either.
Yeah, which for me is the main thing. It's why I learned Linux, so that, you know, I was in control of what I knew. I would feel very much the same way if I was coming into like the 3D graphics industry or the video game industry.
And if you see the amount of features for what is essentially a point release is insane. The physics stuff, the rendering stuff, the development in VR, which, okay, if you fancy that sort of thing, but it's a cool thing to be able to do. It's just amazing. It doesn't look like a project that you're not paying thousands upon thousands for license for every developer. Let's put it that way. Because, well, open source software can be equally as professional, but just the professionalism of this, it just looks amazing.
And it's got a suitably professional looking website as well, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've been downloading it for about 2 years every now and again, randomly. Funny, it doesn't write the code itself, though.
I imagine your experience is something along the lines of, I know, I'll use Blender to do that, and then bashing your head on the desk for 20 minutes, and then watching some YouTube videos of some 16-year-old showing you these amazing things, and then giving up.
Yeah, it's almost like you're watching me here.
Well, Graham's sitting there all smug, isn't he? Because you actually know how to use Blender.
I could do a few things in it, maybe 5% of Blender.
You can do more than open it, stare at it and go, nah.
Yeah, a little bit. And actually these days, I found it's really good for 3D printing. Mm. seriously, because sometimes like everybody's kind of using complicated meshes. A lot of that has been abstracted away. So you're kind of pulling things with magnets. With Blender, maybe I'm just too old school. You know, I like working with points that snap to a grid and be in control of where you're actually creating your triangles. And you could do that with Blender when I make, sometimes I do have to make things that are exactly this, the size I need them to be. And I've never been able to understand FreeCAD, so I default to Blender.
I feel a bit like anytime I try to do anything in 3D, I feel a bit like, you know, when, who's that fellow used to have the Cosmos show in the 80s?
Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan. And he's talking about trying to describe 4D space, and the shadow of a 4D object is a tesseract. And I'm just looking at it going, okay, okay, cool, cool. And walking away now.
I can't even get my head around Inkscape, man. GIMP, I can just about understand. Okay, you've got pixels and you can color those pixels different colors and draw lines and stuff. But even vectors are beyond me in 2D. So I just, 3D stuff just blows my mind.
I think it's actually easier to draw a rectangle in Blender than it is in GIMP.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wouldn't know how to do it in GIMP. I think I would just select it and fill it in GIMP, which is probably not how you should do it. EA just open sourced Command & Conquer, Red Alert, Renegade, and Generals. So these are all quite old games, but nevertheless, this is pretty cool and unexpected.
Yeah, this is nice to see. I thought originally that this story was, oh my God, they've open sourced all of Command & Conquer, but apparently they'd open sourced quite a lot of that, like Tiberian Dawn and Red Alert had already been open sourced some time ago, which passed me by. But to see there being more stuff open sourced by EA somewhat repairs the damage that they've done to their reputation. Only a little bit. But nevertheless, they've uploaded it to GitHub. They've got all the licenses correct. It's really well done. And I think that the people at EA that decided that this was the right thing to do was really well done by them. And I applaud them for doing this. The other thing they've done hand in hand with this is enable Steam Workshop support so that we can start to see a whole bunch of new mods coming through for those old games, which means, I hope, new missions and new, you know, gameplay scenarios, which will be great fun. This is a game that I've invested hundreds of hours into over the years. It's still going, as far as I'm concerned, still going strong. I still enjoy playing it. And the really great thing, in my mind, is that it won't impact OpenRA at all, because OpenRA is an entirely separate code base. Doing similar things, yes, but this is the real one, as it were. OpenRA can continue doing all of the great things that they're doing, and people can start modding this in Steam. So, yeah, nice to see.
What exactly is OpenRA then? Better not ask the Irishman.
That's racist. Hang on.
OpenRA is a piece of code written in .NET, I think, that is able to understand like the map files and the mission files from Red Alert and things like that, and present them in a similar way, but it's in a clean room implementation, so it doesn't reuse any of the same code. So they don't really need access to this code in order to achieve what they've done. They've done it entirely independently.
Right, I see. Meet Rayhunter, a new open source tool from the EFF to detect cellular spying.
So this is pretty cool. I did try running an app on my phone which did similar, but it was very iffy with what chipsets you had. And what I like about what they've done here is the fact that there is a piece of hardware they recommend you can get it, the Orbic hotspot, and then everybody can do the same thing. Now, the only problem is the second I saw this page, I thought, whoa, I could pick up one of those. They said only $20. Yeah, nah, good luck with that, because I couldn't find a single place that would sell them. I think they sold out everywhere. And then the other places that I did see it, they had like shipping for $30 on top of the $20. I just thought, no, out of principle, I'm not doing that. But it's a cool idea.
Yeah, so the idea of this is you install it on this hotspot, and then it can detect when it's connected to a fake cell tower, effectively.
Yeah, and I think the problem being with a lot of things like, well, democracy demonstrations and the like are getting hit with a lot of attacks these days. And there are a lot of devices like IMSI catchers and stuff out there that are being used by oppressive regimes. It is nice to be able to have a tool that people can bring with them that's cheap and affordable. And if they manage to get them from online stores, that they can implement them and carry it in a backpack with a power supply or whatever. It's good.
So is this a bit like carrying around a Raspberry Pi, which is logging all of the MAC addresses of the Bluetooth devices it sees? Is that how it works?
Kind of, but it's actually working on a cell phone protocol. So it's not just Wi-Fi, it's 4G as well. So, you know, you're able to actually detect, because a lot of the old ones were, you know, they could tell if you were being forced onto 2G because it had a lower, crappier encryption. But a lot of the more advanced ones are now still able to insert themselves in the middle with some of the higher protocols. So this is a sort of upgraded version of that, essentially. Previously, there was software available on the likes of F-Droid, where you could use your phone to do it, but it only worked with the odd chipset here and there. And that was the hard thing about it, whereas I think the advantage is the fact that they've essentially picked a generic piece of equipment that's cheap and then written their software to it. And that is quite cool about it, I think.
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Tailscale. Go to tailscale.com/LNL. Tailscale is the easiest way to connect devices and services to each other, wherever they are. Everyone these days has a VPN as a sponsor, but Tailscale isn't like those. This isn't about hiding your browsing habits from coffee shop owners, and it's not about watching Netflix in another country. Tailscale is a proper VPN for connecting your devices securely. It's great for companies, and it's great for self-hosters. I use Tailscale to send ZFS snapshots to my parents' house, and I didn't have to open any ports to get it set up. Other Late Night Linux family hosts use Tailscale for all sorts, including controlling 3D printers, remoting into relative systems for support, and controlling Home Assistant. Tailscale is zero-trust network access that every organization can use, and with Tailscale's ACL policies, you can securely control access to devices and services with next-gen network access controls. With Tailscale, you can do all sorts, like connect multiple cloud providers together as if they were a flat network, authenticate without authentication using Tailscale app connectors, or send files securely to any node from any node on your Tailnet using Taildrop. Tailscale's personal plan will always be free, so support the show and try Tailscale out for free today. You'll get up to 100 devices and 3 users for free at tailscale.com/LNL with no credit card required. That's tailscale.com/LNL. On to a bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to latenightlinux.com/support. And remember that for various amounts on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And you even get some episodes early. And if you want to get in contact, you can email show@latenightlinux.com. Android's native Linux terminal app is live in Google's latest update. And sure enough, on my Pixel 9 Pro Fold, it was there in the developer options after the March update. So I've been briefly checking this out, and what you get is a proper Debian VM, much like on Chrome OS, because Chrome OS is eventually going to go away and be replaced by Android. So they're kind of laying the groundwork for that.
I have a feeling that when I last talked about using an SSH client on my phone, you all took the piss out of me. But now, it's a good idea, is it?
I'm not saying it's a good idea, it's just an idea.
That said, right, the Pi that's hooked up to the TV, so the new TV, we've had it for a year, the TV has decided to stop passing the remote control to the Pi with that protocol, that HMI CEC, I think it's called.
CEC.
Yeah, it's just decided randomly, nah, not having it. So sometimes we have to log into the Pi and tell it to restart. So I use Termux to do that.
Well, I've been using Juice SSH for years.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. You can't use that because it's on the Play Store, I think. But yeah, I've been using SSH on my phone for years.
Yeah, me too.
So I wouldn't take the piss out of you, Will. I wouldn't dream of it.
No, but I mean, it's sometimes it as Phelim just said, it's perfect for those times you sat down to do something and, you know, watch something or listen to some music, and, you know, some Raspberry Pi somewhere is broken. With me, it's because the HDMI port needs to be active and connected to the Raspberry Pi for the audio to appear at the amplifier. So,
well, for me, it's more I'll be sitting eating and we're watching at the moment King of the Hill. And my wife hasn't turned it up enough, so I'll SSH in, I'll submix her up a couple of times. And she sees it turn up and she's like, what? Oh, you've done that again. But this is way more than just being able to SSH out of it. It's a proper Debian VM. You can install whatever you want on it. It is buggy as fuck right now. Mm. So I wouldn't recommend it for anything other than just checking it out. But it is experimental and all the rest of it. It downloads like 500 megabytes of shit to make it work in the first place.
Sudo apt install build-essentials and then start compiling the kernel. Is that what you do? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And people have managed to get Doom running, obviously, but I've not managed to get any graphical stuff running yet because I just didn't spend enough time on it, I think. But that is supposedly coming soon. You'll be able to run graphical apps. I don't know how useful that will ultimately be, but it's a good novelty for now.
We might get convergence yet then.
You never know. But yeah, if you've got a recent Pixel, do the updates and check it out. It's worth looking at least, even if you can't do that much with it at the moment.
Sorry if you've talked about this in another podcast, but how are you getting on with your folding phone? Is that something you've covered somewhere else?
No, I'm trying to stay quiet about it because people just take the piss out of me constantly.
Oh, okay.
Very well is the bottom line. It hasn't broken yet.
Are you sure? Oh, we haven't seen any pictorial evidence to the contrary, though.
No, it's great. It's exactly what I wanted, basically. It is very heavy, and occasionally I pick up my old Pixel 7 and realize how light that is compared to this and, you know, not chunky. But I've got used to the chunkiness and the weight, and it's just so great when someone sends you a PDF or when you want to read an article to just unfold it and just have this huge screen to view it on.
A TIFF of a microfiche.
Yeah.
I like the idea. That's why I'm asking. I still like the idea.
I mean, I'm planning to go into central London in a few weeks. And that's why I got the Pixel 7 out, to get it up to date so I can put my SIM in that, because I'm not taking it into central London, my fold. No way. For fear of dropping it or getting it nicked or whatever.
Somebody tried to nick it and they slip a disc.
Yeah.
I'm just someone who takes far too many things when I travel. I'm convinced I need my Steam Deck and my Kindle and a tablet and my computer. And I only end up using my laptop, so I don't need anything else. So I just need a way of convincing myself, some kind of crutch, just so I just take two things. That would really help.
Well, it's great for modern video that is like square aspect ratio, Instagram and shit like that. And really old school 4x3 video as well. Mm. It's great for. So there's that as well. And yeah, it's just like having a tablet and a phone in one. It's great. It's very expensive and very delicate. But, you know, if you want to just live for today, then get one, Graham. Don't pay like 1,600-1,800 quid for one. No, that's ridiculous.
Oh, God, no. I couldn't do that.
But keep an eye on eBay for one that comes up in a good price.
Okay.
You won't regret it.
Thanks.
Well, you will regret it as soon as it breaks.
I've got some cheap-ass Chinese from you know, 4 years ago without a case. It's perfect. You know, I'm just waiting. It's probably not going to go anywhere for another 5 years. I can see it.
Right, well, we better get out of here then. We'll be back next week when, who knows what it'll be, probably discoveries and stuff, but we'll have to see. Until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Phelim.
I've been Graham.
And I've been Will.
See you later.